Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Jets just signed Robert Saleh to be the next head coach of the organization. Huge breaking news. The podcast was recorded earlier tonight, so we're going to let that play following this snippet, but we wanted to hop on and talk to you for a few minutes about this. I'm feeling great. I love the hire. And Will actually had a scoop on this 6 hours before Josina Anderson broke the news. So, Will, how are you feeling about this? I know you're happy.
I feel pretty good, to be honest with you. Had some sources within the organization let me know earlier today that it'd be done within a 24-hour window. I happened to kind of find out it was going to be Robert Saleh earlier tonight. And, very excited about that, but also even more excited for the Jets organization as a whole. Robert Saleh is somebody that, as you'll hear us talk about later in the pod, I've been kind of advocating for a long time and never thought this was realistically going to be able to happen. And to get him and also get Mike LaFleur to come in, run Kyle Shanahan's offense and defense, that was a Super Bowl, in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Incredibly exciting. It's probably the happiest the fan base has been since drafting Sam, and probably the most united the fan base has been since 2010 AFC title game. So I'm pumped. I know you're pumped. I think the fan base as a whole should be incredibly excited with what's going on.
Yeah, big thing about this is that he's bringing LaFleur in, and we got that news almost immediately after we got the Saleh news. So that's huge. I think Jets fans, and you'll hear us say later on in the pod, but we said that we think that they'll be super excited with this hire, and clearly they are. It's been an overwhelmingly positive result. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn on the Jets podcast, where myself, Matt Gionesis, and my co-host, Will Parkinson, talk everything New York Jets football. If you're listening for the first time in a few weeks, your old host, Joe Caparoso, has passed the torch down to some of the newer members of Turn on the Jets. Don't you worry, we'll still deliver the best Jets football content around. You can now find Joe on Badlands feed along with Connor Rogers. You can subscribe to Badlands on Patreon. Also, make sure to tune into other Taj-affiliated shows, including Draft Season, which will be released every Wednesday leading up to the draft. As promised, we have plenty of great guests lined up for you. Today, we will be joined by Charles McDonald. Charles covers the Jets for the Daily News. He did it earlier this season. He was around the team and their coaches and got plenty of in-depth insight on the organization. So that's going to be a fun one that we have coming up. But we'll get to that interview in a moment. First, we have a few other things we want to talk about. So, Will, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Coming off a exciting national championship game, at least from an offensive perspective, watching Alabama run up and down the field on Ohio State. We got to see some potential Jets targets, like Justin Fields, Najee Harris, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, so as well as some offensive linemen. So pretty exciting there. Kind of some mixed reviews, on Justin Fields' performance, but obviously Devontae Smith kind of stole the show for everybody. So definitely some exciting stuff there. And then, obviously an exciting coaching search going on as well.
Yeah, I tuned into the game in the second half, but I got a chance to look at the stats. I think overall Fields went 17 for 33, 191 and a touchdown and no picks. So what I've heard, kind of the consensus on social media, wasn't the best performance, but no huge mistake there either. So uninspiring, but also, Trevor Lawrence also put up a dud in a national championship game. So it's going to happen. What were your thoughts on Fields?
It wasn't Fields' best night. I thought he had a couple really good throws, a couple really good drives. To start the game, he looked good, and then kind of looked good towards the end. A little frustrating second quarter. Once Ohio State started to kind of fall behind, Fields felt like he was pressing a lot. Made a couple really questionable decision throws. One in the fade of the end zone. Just totally airmailed it and then came back with a really risky ball in the red zone. So little concern there, but also made a beautiful throw, you know, down the middle. And also his touchdown was, you know, dropped it into a bucket. So mixed reviews. I don't think I want to overreact one way or the other. Kind of feel the same about Fields I felt the whole time. I don't think he's a can't miss prospect, but I also, I'm not going to be, you know, furious if he ends up being a New York Jet. So I was more impressed, honestly, with some of the talent at the wide receiver position, and as well as Najee Harris, who feels like he's impossible to tackle. Devontae Smith looks really good. Obviously, Jalen Waddle on half a leg after having not played football in 3 months looked like the fastest guy in the field, which was pretty incredible. Guy hasn't played football, has a fractured ankle, and comes back. And, you know, Sean Wade called out in these Alabama receivers, and for him to get cooked by Jalen Waddle on one leg in and out of a comeback route was concerning for Sean Wade, but incredibly exciting if you're a Jalen Waddle guy. So how'd you feel, you know, watching some of these, you know, prospects?
Yeah, you and I talked about this off air a little bit, but and a few others have said it, but it's so funny how fans kind of just, they'll look at one game and they'll use that game just to change their decision, or it'll persuade them to lean one way or the other. I think Jets fans are doing that a lot, and rightfully so. It's understandable, you know, with the given situation at quarterback. But it's funny to see Zach Wilson have a good game, and then the whole fan base has their Twitter profile pictures changed to Zach Wilson. Then Fields has a good game, they do the same. So probably a little bit of an overreaction, but the game had its ups and downs. I was pretty interested in Najee Harris, I'm not going to lie, because I've been on record saying for a while I want him to be the Jets, one of the Jets' second-round picks. I say one of the Jets' second-round picks. I'm expecting a two for Sam. I would love to have Harris there in the second round, and I completely understand the argument that taking a running back in the second round when you have so many holes on your roster is not the right move. I get that, but I'm a Harris guy. He looks so tough to tackle. There was a play in that game where somebody just bounced off of him, and he just kept on going. So I'm a big fan of that. What do you think of Harris?
I like Harris's game a lot. He's got a lot of tread on his tires in the last 2 years, which is concerning. Obviously, that was kind of the reason – part of the reason Josh Jacobs kind of flew up people's draft boards was he had like 240 carries in his total college career. And then, you know, obviously balled out against Oklahoma. And then, and he just, like, he looked great in the playoff. But – and then, you know, the Raiders love guys that play in the Final Four, you know, Final Four team, you know, college football playoffs. So – I'm impressed by Najee Harris. I think he's somebody that is going to be a really good pro. He caught the ball well. He ran well. I mean, he had 3.6 yards per carry, but he still ended up finishing the game with 80 yards and then, you know, 80 yards rushing, another 80 yards, you know, in the air. So he's an impressive guy. At 34, I'd be interested in him. I think at 23, if we're taking a running back, I'm expecting that means we blow people out of the water in free agency, because I get nervous just with, you know, kind of what we've been through with running backs. I mean, being able to find guys, even like a Ty Johnson, like we talked about last pod, he's a 6th-round pick we got off of waivers, and he rushed for 100 yards. So I'm interested. I'm intrigued. I'd like to see what he runs at the combine, to be honest with you, just from a, you know, just from a speed perspective, and see if it matches up to his on-film kind of speed. But his ability to hurdle, his ability to break tackles, play you're talking about, he runs a – runs a route out of the backfield and gets absolutely boomed, and just the guy flew off of him and like took 4 guys to bring him down. That's impressive to me. So definitely a lot of intriguing prospects in that game. No doubt about that.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment for Harris. And I also think another fair argument would be Joe Douglas isn't taking a running back that early, just given his value on premium positions. And that's just not running back. So I understand that argument definitely, but I'm still sticking to my guts here. I want Harris that early. So that was a national championship game. It was a blowout. Devonta Smith, just 3 touchdowns. Would he have 100 and 200 yards? Something just
ridiculous. Yeah, 215 in the first half. Pretty insane.
First half, yeah. And the camera scrolled over him pregame. He looked like a 6th grader just standing there on the sidelines. It's so funny. This guy's the Heisman, just torching defenses. But yeah, small frame, but the guy is insane. So I'm interested to see when he goes in the draft. So kind of moving away from the draft and getting into the head coaching search, a lot has gone on over the last few days. The Jets had Robert Saleh in for the 2nd time in person. This meeting lasted overnight, and Saleh came back in the morning, or he might have stayed at the facility. I don't know how that went, but he was back there in the morning, and he stayed for, I think it was 7 hours during the day. So it seems though conversations had to have been pretty serious if he was there for that long. And we had some other things go on with Arthur Smith. So, Will, what's your take on what's going on with the head coaching position right now?
Well, for me, kind of from what I'm being told, this thing's going to wrap up pretty shortly here. Urban Meyer, as we're recording, was just the first domino to fall in the head coaching search, going to you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think with that domino falling, and also what I've heard, the Jets should be wrapped up here next 24 to 48 hours. I'm hoping, and from what I'm hearing, I think it's going to be Robert Saleh, which would really excite me, and I think would excite the whole fan base. I feel really good about his ability to lead, his ability to build both our defense, but also have his hands at least in the offensive coaching staff, and be able to bring in either Mike McDaniel, Mike LaFleur over initially, you know, potentially Mike Kafka if those guys aren't allowed to leave by Kyle Shanahan. But I'm not concerned about the offensive staff perspective. I think a lot of people brought up valid points, both in the Turn on Jets feed. I've seen people from, you know, Pro Football Talk, you know, Mike Florio amongst others, you know, kind of highlight the concern of like how great it's gone for the Saints because they've had the same guy calling plays for the past decade plus. The same thing with the Chiefs. It's always the same system. It might be someone different calling them, but and then you look at a place like Minnesota, great defensive head coach, and they've had success, but Kirk Cousins has had three offensive coordinators in 3 years, and they keep getting poached. So I'm I'm not quite as high on him as I would be, as it would be Dable, to be honest with you. It's not my ideal hire, but I would also be able to talk myself into it. He's done some great stuff with Tannehill, with Derrick Henry, AJ Brown, Corey Davis, guys like that have, you know, succeeded really, you know, for the last couple of years underneath him. So kind of circling back, I guess I'd rank Saleh one. I think it's going to be Robert Saleh. I think we're going to hear in the next day or two. You know, but if it's Arthur Smith, I'm okay with that. I think the Jets are in a great spot right now where both candidates are, you know, premier. They're their most sought-after candidates on the market, and that's something that I don't think we could always say about the Jets. How about yourself?
Yeah, I think Robert Saleh is the type of candidate that's easy for Jets fans to get behind just after what we had in terms of personality, not even, you know, what we saw on the field with Adam Gase. So we had somebody that wasn't really the best with media, and then we have somebody that's very energetic, kind of owns the room. Has this alpha kind of vibe to him. So I think it's a big contrast between what the Jets had, and it's a move that the Jets fans can get behind, which is something that you don't see very often. And I like Arthur Smith. I think he received some kind of unrightful hate on social media recently. And what he did in Tennessee should not be discredited. He did an unbelievable job with Tannehill. And then you could argue Henry was great before him, which I'm sure he's an amazing talent, but to balance the passing game and the rushing game like he did was definitely something impressive. So I'm a fan of Smith right now. I would love the Saleh hire just because I really think the reaction from the fans, everybody could get behind something like that. And I like that I saw the relationship between him and Quinnen Williams on social media where Quinnen was tweeting at him that he was pumped. Something along those lines. I don't remember specifically what happened. What was it?
It was just basically, there was a clip from when the Jets played you know, the Niners this year, and he was just like, Quinn's an unbelievable football player, ultra talented. And Quinn threw on his Instagram story with the fire in the eyes and then tweeted it like while he was in the building the next day. So it's pretty clear that there's players that want him and that want him as well. And to me, you know, I think Quinn is an all-pro player underneath Saleh. You look at guys like DeForest Buckner and Nick Bosa, like DeForest Buckner just got traded for a top 15 pick this year as a D tackle, like in a contract year. And he was really good before then, but under Robert Saleh became an elite, you know, they were a Super Bowl defense, and this year finishing sixth overall in defense with, they had 84 guys play snaps. That's insanity. And like the fact that he was able to get the best out of all these guys and, you know, it's something that I think is really admirable that he's able to adapt his scheme based on who they're playing, but also be able to stick to his principles and like, and drill those home, be disciplined. They play hard for him. You know, I'm sure we'll share this after the podcast, the 2 minute clip of him in that Rams game, getting absolutely fired up on the sidelines. He's headbutting players. He's flexed and freaking out. You know, that's something that the New York crowd and New York, New Jersey, you know, that's something that everyone I think can kind of relate to. And the fact that him and Douglas would be quite frankly, the scariest, you know, head coach GM tandem. I'm excited, man. I hope that's him. You know, we'll update you throughout the pod if we hear something differently as well. You know, kind of on the hire.
Yeah. So he you could say, what was it like, 50% of their team was out against the Jets week one after the maybe second drive. It was ridiculous. Everybody was going down. They were complaining it's the MetLife turf. But what he did with that defense, just given so many injuries, Nick Bosa, you know, standing, headlining all of those injuries, was definitely admirable. I agree with what you said there. And not to harp on Saleh too long, but something very important about him that, of course, is being talked about with other head coach candidates now, like Staley, the Rams defensive coordinator, is the coordinators that he'd be able to bring in with him. So the big talk is Mike McDaniel, the run game coordinator in San Francisco, and Mike LaFleur, the passing game coordinator. And I've been kind of flip-flopping which guy I'd rather have the Jets take. There's an argument to be made for both guys. But earlier today I was on Twitter and I read a tweet from the ex-Bengals receiver, Andrew Hawkins. And I heard him say, multiple teams have inquired about 49ers run game coordinator Mike McDaniels for offense coordinator. I played one season under Mike, and if they want an offensive guru, I bet every dollar in my bank account that no other candidate understands offensive football the way he does. Every single dollar. And I saw Johnny Manziel commented on it, and he agreed with him. So there's something to think there, that players that have worked with him respect him that highly. So that's something to keep in mind when we're talking about Robert Saleh, is the pedigree of coordinator that he could bring in with him. You have any opinions on McDaniel and LaFleur?
I don't, you know, I think either one's a home run for the Jets.
Right.
I think people speak incredibly highly of McDaniel. I think he's going to be the hot name on the market in 2 years. I also think LaFleur, I mean, his brother's been incredibly successful in Green Bay. Yes, he's Aaron Rodgers, but Rodgers was had a down year last year and they still, you know, made the conference championship game. You know, LaFleur is a passing game coordinator, so biasly, that to me always sounds more, you know, it sounds something that would get you a little more excited. But the way people talk about McDaniel in the league, every, you know, reputable source I can think of has spoken really highly of him. So I'm on board with either one of them. Kafka also interests me if that's something that happens as well. You know, he's coming from a Chiefs system. It's not like the Jets are linked. Saleh's linked to incredibly, incredibly talented coordinators, people that might be on his staff. So if I'm the Jets, I mean, I'm pulling the trigger as soon as I can. I've been banging the Robert Saleh drum for the last 18 months. The only issue is I never thought the Jets had a chance. And the fact that he was in their building for 2 days, they've interviewed him twice and they let him go, scared me a little bit. But we all were like freaking out. But I do think, based on what I've heard from everyone, is him and Smith wanted to see the process out. They know they're the two top candidates. I don't doubt that they want to make sure they're getting the right amount of money. They'll be able to bring the right staff and it's the right opportunity. I'm not going to sit there and blame the guy for taking a second interview when he could coach Justin Herbert for the next 15 years, or taking an interview with the Eagles, who won a Super Bowl 3 years ago, the Jags. You know, you go on Shad Khan's yacht, you never know. You never know what could happen. So, yeah, and I like both candidates. I like the coordinators they're linked to. I'd prefer Saleh, and I think it's going to be Saleh, and it's going to be pretty shortly here, so.
Yeah, as of 7:15 p.m. on January 14th, I think me and you both are pretty confident we're going to see Dable end up in Los Angeles with the Chargers, which, in our opinion, that we've talked about this earlier, leaves us with probably about two serious candidates left with Arthur Smith and Robert Saleh. So to end up this podcast, do you have any final words on what you think's going to happen in the next couple of days, what you're looking forward to?
I'm just excited that there's a potential we're going to get a top candidate on the market if everything breaks the right way, which I think it's going to. I'm excited for the fact that college football season's over. We're fully into the offseason from a Jets perspective. We got great games this weekend. You know, Baltimore-Buffalo is going to be an incredible game in the snow on a Saturday night. Lamar, Josh Allen, you can't help but think year one was Baker and then year two is Lamar. Josh Allen took a huge leap this year. I don't know if it's with the Jets or I don't know who it's going to be with, but you can only hope that, you know, it'll be Sam's time year four. I know that's being optimistic, but quite frankly, it's not the first time I've heard that. So I'm excited. Let's just, you know, hope that we're recording next week and we can talk about, you know, a new head coach and, you know, have some other good interviews coming up, you know, potentially with whoever they hire, you know, someone who knows them closely.
Yeah, you often hear the off season is the Jets' regular season, so we're just getting started now. A lot of exciting things going on. Had a lot of fun recording this podcast today. Stay tuned because after we're done speaking here, we're going to have our Charles McDonald interview. Charles, I'll give a brief preview on him once he's in here, but it's a good interview. So stay tuned. It's a fun time, and we will see you next week.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We are now joined by Charles McDonald of USA Today's For the Win. Unlike plenty of writers that cover football, Charles is actually very in tune with the X's and O's of the sport, so I'm definitely a follower of his work. Charles covered the Jets for the Daily News for some time during the season, and he got a firsthand look at the 2-14 football team. So, Charles, the first question that we have for you, we know it's one that everyone wanted to hear. How is the PlayStation 5?
Oh, it's great. I mean, there was a moment there where I thought that FedEx might have jacked it. And because the way it worked was, I wasn't even planning on getting one until after the season because I was like, I know if I get this during the season, I'm just going to waste so much time. And I would like to focus on my work because I had a lot on my plate. And then I switched jobs and I had like 2 weeks off. So I was like, shoot, like, let me see if I can get my hands on a PlayStation. And it was like maybe the hardest thing I had to buy. Like I used to joke with my friends. I was like, yo, like this is the hardest I've ever worked to spend $500 in my entire life. Cause like, it just seemed like they didn't want it. Like every turn, like they got a Best Buy drop and all the other crap. So and it was so hard to get one. So I got one through a friend that resells stuff. He was like, yo, like, if you want, like, I'll just send you one at retail price. So I bought it from him and it got lost in the mail at FedEx for like 2 weeks. And in the time of them just straight up disappear, like where my PlayStation was, I actually bought one off Best Buy and I bought one off Walmart. And then right before I went to go pick up the Best Buy one up, I got a text from FedEx. It was like, hey, your thing is at the location you requested to be. So I was a little, you know, like, is it actually there? And I went there and the box was like pretty beat up, but the actual PlayStation box inside the box was untouched. So I got it. It's great. I sent the other two off to some friends and I got another one for a family friend. So in like the meantime of me trying to get my hands on one, I actually ended up buying four total. And I was able to dish them out to family friends. So it's fun. I mean, the graphics are great. There aren't too many games out right now, but if you want one, you should definitely try to get your hands on one because it's fun.
I was going to say that that's where FedEx Slayer comes from in the Twitter name.
Yeah. I actually, in the meantime, like I was so concerned about this happening was, so I actually drove down to, I'm in Charlotte at my parents' place in the local FedEx facilities in Fort Mill, Charlotte, or it's Fort Mill, South Carolina, which is like a 15-minute drive. So I actually drove down there one day because they said my package was there and it wasn't there. And the lady who works at the Fort Mill station called me from their phone. So I don't know if you've dealt with FedEx before, but their customer service is like notoriously hard to get through. Like the machine, when you call, it'll block you like at every single turn you're trying to talk to a real person. But she accidentally called me with like the actual FedEx number from Fort Mill. So I saved it. Whenever I needed to get in touch with somebody, I would just call directly to them and bypass customer service directly. So like by the end of the week of me trying to get in touch with them, I was on a first name basis with the woman who works there. Like she would see my number pop up and she was like, is this Charles again? I was like, hey, Kathy, is there any update on where my PlayStation is? And she was like, no, I don't have anything for you, but I would really like you to stop calling, so I'm going to work on it for you. And then a few days later, it popped up at where I requested to be dropped off.
Yeah, I'm definitely.
What's the game of choice at the moment?
I just beat the Spider-Man Miles Morales game, which is pretty fun, but unfortunately, like, the campaign's only like 7-8 hours long. So right now, I'm just playing a lot of Black Ops in 2K, just waiting for new stuff to drop.
There you go. I'm a big FIFA guy, so if you download FIFA, I might be able to. I'm gonna have to take you down.
I'm gonna get it at some point because my friends just like bully me so much. But I when I was in college, we used to play like drinking games with FIFA. Like anytime someone scored. You had to take a shot.
Shot FIFA. Right. Yeah, and there you go.
I remember the last time I played was like my freshman year, and I lost 11-1, and I had a really bad night that night.
11-1, oh boy.
Don't remember.
Anyways, well, I guess we can get into some football stuff. We have some questions around the draft and Sam Darnold, the quarterback position, but. Obviously kind of with what's going on with Robert Saleh coming in for a final interview today, and Joe Brady being, heavily linked as well. Who do you think is really the best fit for the Jets? And kind of what are your thoughts on Robert Saleh as a whole?
The Jets, I'm not really sure if they need to go, like one guy that's like, mastermind offensive guy or mastermind defensive guy. Like I think after the past few years of Adam Gase, you just kind of need to find someone that will make you look like a real football team again. And, really whoever they feel like can be like the best CEO and, I guess kind of someone who's like Matt Rhule, where you kind of trust them to just shell everything off and you'll find the right coordinators and we can get this thing going in a couple of years. I think that's what they kind of need to look for. Joe Brady, I get the intrigue there, but that kind of scares me a little bit. I mean, the guy is just – he doesn't really have that much NFL experience. Like, I know he was with the Saints a little bit before he was with LSU and the Panthers, but still, like, you're talking about a guy who is really known for just two seasons of coordinating, that LSU season, then one season with Carolina, and now you're going to ask him to run the whole thing. Like, I don't doubt that in time he could be that, but right now it just seems like it's a bit of a far stretch for him to just run and come in and take that thing over, especially because Carolina's offense, like, it kind of fell apart like towards the bottom of the season, and you can debate whether that's on Teddy or the play calling or injuries or what have you, but I still got some questions there. I think Saleh, I mean, just based on the reports today, kind of seems like obviously he's one of the finalists if he's going to come in and get a second interview with the team. And just like when you ask people about him, it's like all the stuff like you read about him. Like he's a really energetic guy, really smart. He kind of came in when he was with when he got hired by Gus Bradley and the Jaguars. He kind of came in and like got them up to date on how to use like all their playbook information and stuff like that. That was on the computer, and just based on his background, he seems like a guy that Jets fans would at least react strongly to, because everyone's kind of reacting strongly to him. I think with him is one, if you're going to hire a defensive guy, you got to nail the offensive side of the ball, which has plagued a lot of defensive coordinators over the years. But if he is as good of a head man as people, portray him to be, then I don't really think that that would be too big of a deal. And two, I think that with Saleh, his defense has like roots when you look at how Seattle and Jacksonville and Atlanta have played their defenses over the year with, heavy cover three stuff, but he's kind of evolved on his own rights. Like they've run a lot of quarters defense. They've gotten really creative with their blitz scheme. So I also don't think that like pegging him in with the Dan Quinns and Gus Bradleys of the world is quite fair to him, considering what he's done with San Francisco. And like this year was really impressive considering all the injuries that they had in the front seven, especially along the defensive line. And, by EPA standards, they still finish with a top 10 defense, which is, that's a good coordinating job. And I think that he's someone where you just kind of bring him in, he fixes the culture. It's like just energy wise, it's a big shift from Adam Gase. And that from then on, it's just like the players and the coordinators that he can fill out. But as a head man, I think I'd be pretty pleased with that if I was a Jets fan.
Yeah. I mean, he adapted a lot this year. Like they played, I know in the past they've gone a lot of cover three, but then like the beginning of the year in Arizona and the Jets game, they're playing a lot of cover four, and then they adapted, played a lot of cover one. And like, I feel like Quinnen especially could be, an all pro level player under somebody like that, watching like Buckner and Bosa and all these guys flourish. So.
Yeah. And one thing about the defense is like, you made a point as it's like, as the the personnel shifts a little bit. Like you see the coverage of shift that they use. Like if you have someone like Fred Warner, you don't need to sit in cover three all day and kind of protect your linebackers. You can play cover four and let him just run like the entire middle of the field. And, you know, it takes a Fred Warner level talent to be able to do stuff like that. But to know that you have something like that and then be able to adjust and feature that role a little bit more, like I think that's a sign of good coaching.
In a world where the term culture builder is definitely overused, you want to like roll your eyes when you hear it. I can't think of a team that needs that type of guy more than the Jets do right now, just post Adam Gase. So good insight there on Saleh. Let's kind of switch over to Darnold. So you spent some time covering the Jets this year. You saw Darnold play up close, 9 touchdowns, 11 interceptions in 13 games. So we want to know, what's your opinion on Darnold and what the Jets should do moving forward?
I still think that I'm not as high as Darnold as I was entering the year, because I felt like entering the year, he was just a bad situation. And it still was a bad situation through the end of the year, but I feel a little less confident about his ability, I guess, to kind of figure this out with the new coaching staff, just based on how poorly he played this year. But I don't think he's unsalvageable. I mean, he's younger than Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson, and it's just kind of hard to give up on someone with that skill set. And I think that really the best thing for both parties is just kind of to move on, where like you're going to have to take the L on the draft picks. Like, you're not going to get a first-round pick in return for Darnold or anything. You're going to have to trade him to hopefully a team, for his sake, is a team that has somewhere he can just sit for a year and just kind of recalibrate his brain, because like the physical talent's all there, and we've seen flashes of like even the mental stuff coming together for him, but it was just so inconsistent. He's been in and out of the lineups. Like, I just think he needs a hard reset. And if you're the Jets, like, and you're a new coach and you're Joe Douglas, neither of those guys would have drafted Sam Darnold, have like any real ties to him. So like, why would you keep banking your career on someone who, like you said, like had 9 touchdowns and 11 interceptions in 13 games? And I think if you watch Darnold, you know that the potential to be something much better than that is there, but he's not there yet. And you have an opportunity to pick like a real franchise quarterback with the second pick in the draft and get someone that's your guy and someone that you can kind of sell the fan base on. Because I think that that's also an important thing. And I know that there are Jets fans who are still of the belief that maybe Darnold can be the guy. Since you're not getting Lawrence, maybe you just roll up, you run it back with Darnold. But I don't think that that's a real option.
Yeah, that's me.
That's you? I don't
I'm a diehard USC fan, so I know I'm biased. I'm far gone.
Okay. Well, at least you recognize that. But I would be absolutely stunned if Darnold was still on the roster come like week one. I don't know when the trade's gonna happen. I think for his sake it's probably best that it happens before the draft. But I would just be stunned if they didn't take quarterback. Like, I don't know whether it's gonna be Justin Fields or Zach Wilson or Trey Lance, if he's a dark horse, but there's going to be a quarterback pick at two.
Yeah, that kind of follows into, you know, what I was going to ask, kind of how you view this top four quarterbacks, you know, in this draft, either, you know, who you think the Jets should take, but also kind of how you view them laying out, whether it's Fields, Wilson, Lance, or Mac Jones, who obviously balled out last night, but has some mobility and, you know, experience questions coming out.
Yeah, I think that the two – well, obviously, you're going to miss out on Trevor Lawrence, which sucks. I mean, to get to the end, like, damn, you got so close. I really feel like, I mean, if you're at two, just based off what I've seen, like, I don't really know if you can go wrong. And there's different ways that you can, like, evaluate each guy. And, like, to me, the most intriguing option is kind of Trey Lance, honestly, because if you just watch him play, and he hasn't really played in a year. He only played one game this year that was just kind of mediocre. But if you watch him play from 2019, I mean, the physical talent is just off the charts. Like, not even just throwing the ball. Like, he can throw a deep ball with ease, just flick of the wrist type crap. And he can actually run the ball too. And you look at his production, and it's like the production is so good, it's like kind of a red flag. Like, 42 touchdowns, 0 turnovers. Like, who does that? But – and North Dakota State definitely helped them out with, like, the reads and how they set up the offense for him. But, like, the physical talent is just otherworldly. And the ability to throw a deep ball is there. Zach Wilson, like, he's got the nickname Mormon Mahomes for a reason. Like, I don't think his arm is, like, quite on the level of Mahomes. But if you're just talking about the ability to ad-lib and throw on the run and throw the deep ball and get some real arc on the ball while keeping the velocity. Like, he's an intriguing option. And then Justin Fields is kind of like, it's just the whole body of work. And the game versus Alabama wasn't his strongest game, but the week before that, he just torched Clemson. And yeah, there's some downside, or not some downside, but like some down points and some question marks that he's going to have to answer throughout the draft process. But as a total body of work, I feel like it'd be kind of hard to be upset at that being the pick number two, even if you do have some question marks for how it's going to turn out. So, you know, I think you're in a good spot to quite frankly draft someone who was a better prospect than Sam Darnold, or as good of a prospect as Sam Darnold in 2018. And then you just kind of got to pray and hope that this is the one that works out for you.
So suffering through the season as a fan, you expected the whole time there would at least be, you know, that prize at the end of the road of Lawrence. And what a blow that was to just not be able to have him on our team. But if you were the GM of a football team right now, are you saying that, and you have the second pick overall, are you saying you'd take Trey Lance?
Well, see, that it kind of depends on where I am. Because, like, if I'm the Falcons, right, and I got Matt Ryan, and that's my team, my favorite team. So I'm pounding the table for Trey Lance because I like the idea of him sitting for a year behind Matt Ryan and then kind of taking over in 2022. But if I'm the Jets, you know, I feel like it's kind of a hard sell to say, look, we're going to take this quarterback from North Dakota State who hasn't played in a year. He kind of got bodied by some Division I AA school the last time we saw him. And we're going to take him at number two, and we're going to give him the starting reins in August, and that's going to be that. Like, that's a little bit of a harder sell. Like, I think it just kind of depends on the situation that you're in. Like, for the Jets, I don't think Trey Lance is a great call unless you're going to bring back Ryan Fitzpatrick or something, and I don't think anybody wants to do anything like that. So I think you take Fields or Wilson because they seem a little bit more ready to start on day one and just kind of roll with the punches and roll with the lumps. Like, I think that no matter what, the Jets just need to keep this thing moving with a rookie quarterback and start that guy week one, because what you don't want to do, from my point of view at least, is like, as a team that's about to start a really lengthy and heavy rebuild, is to just kind of twiddle your thumbs and wait to see if that's the guy. Like, I think you just kind of want to throw him in the fire and figure that out immediately. Trey Lance, I don't think he's quite equipped to handle that right now, or at least is a bigger question mark to me, because we haven't seen him in so long, and he was playing again in an offense that really helped him out a little bit. I think he needs a little bit more seasoning than that, and throwing him to the Wolves will be bad. So for Jets, Fields and Wilson make more sense than Lance to me.
Now, theoretically, if they were to hang on to Sam in my dream world that won't happen, who are some people that fans should be on the lookout for? I know there's been some names thrown around. If you're the GM and, you know, you're picking two, or is it something you're trading back, or is it something that you're looking at a Sewell, Devontae Smith, Jamar Chase type situation if they keep Sam?
What I think what you do is, like, if you're going to keep Sam, you bring in a veteran in free agency, however that may happen. I don't know, maybe it's Marcus Mariota if the Raiders let him out of his contract and let him pursue something. Don't know who exactly that would be, but you just sign someone in free agency and then at the draft. Personally, I don't really see anyone that's not a quarterback that you need to have at number two overall. So I think that you just kind of trade back and then maybe take Devonta Smith, Jamar Chase, like, because if you're gonna have a run at quarterbacks at the top of the draft, someone's gonna fall. Like, whether it's Sewell, Chase, Devonta Smith, I don't know, Patrick Surtain, the quarterback from Alabama, you're gonna have your options there, like in the top 10, that are maybe a little bit more appealing than like taking Devonta Smith second overall. And as good as he is, you know, there are just a little bit better ways to use your resources. And honestly, I don't think that Joe Douglas is someone that would take wide receiver second overall, anyways. So I think if you're going to keep Sam, then the big thing is just to trade back and just say, just use the entire draft season to just drive up trade interest for that number two pick, because it's going to be, you know, either Wilson or Fields most likely.
And the last question that we have for you, just based off your time spent with the team, you know, you're out there watching the guys, or, you know, whatever it is, whether it's the coaches or the players, who's somebody in the organization that you saw that doesn't really get the recognition that they deserve?
I'll tell you, one of my favorite guys to talk to was Andre Carter, the defensive line coach. Because, I mean, obviously talked to him a lot about Quinn in before the season, during the season, whenever we had the chance to talk to him. And I thought that his work over really over kind of the past 2 years was, or whenever he joined the staff, like was just kind of underrated, because it's not like they always gave him a whole lot to work with, but like we saw Quinnen improve to Pro Bowl level this year. Foley was one of the better run defenders in the league as a nose tackle. And I just thought like technically those guys got better, even if they didn't have like the talent to maybe be like super duper impact defensive lineman. And the one guy that does has grown into be that. So I thought Andre Carter deserves some praise for some of the work this year.
He was a great player too. I don't think it's like talked about enough. Like he was a beast while he played.
Yeah, he was. I remember the first time I talked to him, I was like, wait, like is this Andre Carter, the former Patriots defensive lineman? I looked it up. I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. But he's so smart. Like you can ask him like any questions about defensive line technique, and he's got a book for you. Like that dude is brilliant.
All right, so Charles, we want to thank you for joining us today. You can follow Charles at 4verts on Twitter. He's working at For the Win USA Today, so make sure to check out his work. And hopefully we'll have you back soon, Charles. It was a lot of fun.
Yep, cool. Thanks for having me, guys.